Today I'm here with Claire Melamed, the head of ODI's Growth, Poverty and Inequality Programme, to talk about the emerging post-2015 agenda. Claire, a lot of people are talking about post-2015, but what does it actually mean? Why does it matter?
Of course, there's nothing magic about 2015. 2015 is significant because it's the year that the Millennium Development Goals, which have been the set of globally agreed goals that have driven a lot of our thinking and our action on development since they were agreed in the year 2000. 2015 is the year that was agreed on as the end point for those goals. So we have to decide what to do after that. Is there going to be some new framework that guides global development efforts after that or not?
Okay, and how successful have the MDGs been? I mean, isn't this just a classic case of it ain't broke, so we don't need to fix it?
Well, there is, of course, as 2015 approaches, a huge literature developing on what has been the impact of the MDGs. Now, frustratingly, it's an almost impossible question to answer because, of course, we don't know what would have happened if there hadn't been any MDGs. We don't have a different planet where there's been no MDGs to try out and see what, you know, what that might have looked like. I think we can say the MDGs have been very successful in two ways. Firstly, in mobilising resources for development. I'm not sure that you would have got, for example, the big increases in aid that were agreed in 2005 at the G8 in Gleneagles without the MDGs as a kind of organising principle and as a sort of way of defining how much aid was needed. And I think they've also been very successful in really kind of reinforcing and embedding this idea that development is about more than economic growth. And obviously the MDGs put a great focus on health and education as things which are essential parts of development. And having that has really helped to make sure that we think about development in a much broader way than perhaps we did before.
Okay, so how much room for improvement?
I think there is quite a lot of room for improvement. I think you have to be careful in improving that you don't do away with what have been the really good things about the MDGs, their simplicity, the kind of way that they actually are quite limited and they provide a way of focusing attention on a few things. That's been a very strong political driver of change. But on the other hand, the world has changed a lot since the 1990s when the MDGs were being developed and discussed. You know, we know a lot more about development, about what drives development, about what poor people themselves see as the priorities for development. The whole geography of poverty has changed. We're not talking about poor people in poor countries that can be helped by aid anymore. We're talking about poor people largely in middle-income countries. And we've got a whole new set of actors on the block. You know, we've got a much broader range of donors and development partners. We've got much more input from the private sector than perhaps we had in the 1990s. We've got a much stronger NGO sector who are really much more seeing themselves as at the table in these discussions. So I think it's absolutely fair enough to go back and things have changed so much. I think it's absolutely fair enough to go back and see whether the agreement that we made in that world is still right for this world and what changes we need to make.
You talked about emerging donors and emerging players. It seems very little can happen without reference to emerging players. In Busan, all the talk was about China. In Durban, people talking about the basic countries. The Millennium Development Goals have been a UN-controlled process. Should that remain the case? And if so, who within the UN should really be taking the lead on this?
It's true to say that the UN has very much been the sort of guardian of the MDGs, and as the most legitimate global body at which everybody has a seat, that probably should continue. But the MDGs weren't, you know, within the UN, the group that drove the original MDGs were very much a group of donors. It was the UK's Secretary of State for Development at the time, Clare Short, a small group of ministers of development from the big donors that really drove the beginnings of the MDGs. Now, I think within the UN, one can remain within the UN system, but have a very different politics this time, and I think that's what's needed. So, of course, you need to have much more input from middle-income countries who are increasingly globally driving politics, and quite rightly so, but also low-income countries who arguably face the biggest problems in terms of achieving global objectives like the MDGs. And you'd hope that this time around, both of those would have a much bigger say in what the framework actually looks like.
Okay, and you write for the Global Dashboard blog. In your latest paper about what should come next after the MDGs, you start to outline three tracks of thought about what should if anything, replaced the Millennium Development Goals. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Well, this has come out really of sitting in very many conversations, and I suspect many more to come, about what we're going to have post-2015, what should it look like, and a certain frustration developing about a kind of fuzziness around what it is that we actually want a global development framework after 2015 to do. So as I said, the MDGs were very much driven by a group of donors. They had a sort of aid relationship as their underlying principle. That, you know, arguably one of the best things that they did was to increase aid and to focus aid on certain sectors, health and education in particular. But of course, things have changed enormously. You don't necessarily want a new agreement to just be about aid. That would seem a little bit limited and really not very in tune with what we know about development and with the current sort of politics of development. So the question is, if it's not going to be about aid and about driving resource flows, what is a new post-2015 framework going to be for? Of course, another important thing that it could do is to drive policy change within developing countries. And that, in some of the recent meetings and workshops I've been to, is kind of assumed as the main purpose of a post-2015 agreement. But of course, that's quite different to raising resources, and you might want quite a different type of agreement if what you want to do is to change policy within developing countries than if you want to raise resources. And a third thing that people think that a post-2015 framework might do is to act as a sort of set of global norms to really encapsulate everything that we think is important about development and include a much wider range of things than the current MDG framework does. Now, if it were going to do that, it might be telling us everything we know about development and act as a set of sort of broad norms that very slowly percolate into national policies. But I think the risk there is that you'd lose some of the kind of clarity and focus that have made the existing MDGs quite effective in terms of actually making governments do things.
Okay, a lot there and only 3 years to talk about it. Can you tell us how ODI will be contributing to this debate?
Obviously, ODI is a think tank, and our main thing that we do is to take research, do our own research, think about what other people are doing, and use that to feed into policy, to bridge the gap between research and policy, and that's very much the focus of what we're doing on the post-2015 agenda. We've got a quite extensive programme of policy research and development where we're looking both across the board at some of the big questions: what would a post-2015 agreement do, who would it be for, and focusing in on some of the specifics. What might you want to achieve in health? What might you want to achieve in energy infrastructure? How might you tackle income poverty within the context of a new framework, and so on? So we're going both broad and specific. And we also have a big programme of networking, of making contacts, of disseminating what we do, making sure we're involved in policy debates so that we can both make sure that our research is relevant and use that research as quickly as possible to influence policy. As you say, it's a very fast-moving agenda.
Claire, I'm sure lots of people listening will want to find out more about ODI's work on the post-2015 agenda. Can you tell them where to go to do that?
Yes, we have a web page which has got all of our current publications and ongoing work. You can find that at www.odi.org.uk/post-2015.
Thanks, Claire.